Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hello, everybody. This is Paul Dennis speaking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. Welcome to episode number 10 of the Real Deadwood Podcast, a variety show from the Real Deadwood for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series all over the world, combining interviews, entertainment, and news from both Deadwoods. Our show today is going to start out with part one of a recording of some of the Deadwood cast who appeared on Sirius Satellite Radio on a show called Outlaw 36. And they were the guest hosts, and they played some country music. And in between their conversations with each other and with you, of course, the listener, they play some of the HBO Deadwood series soundtrack, which was the audio CD that they put out. They have the, of course, there are the DVDs of the actual show of season one that are out there. And there's also a Deadwood. It's called Deadwood Music from the HBO original series. Now, it says, like I'm looking at it here on Amazon, it says explicit lyrics. Well, the lyrics aren't explicit because what it consists of is all the different music that you hear at the end of each episode. If you watch Deadwood on TV, you know that during the ending credits each week, there's a different piece of music that David Milch picks out that he likes. And so the audio soundtrack is just basically a CD compilation of all that music. But what they did in between the music is they have little snips of dialogue from the show. And, of course, every time Al Swearengen says something, the F word is there. And half the time when Calamity Jane says something, she's got the F word in there. So it's not the lyrics that are explicit. It's the snips of dialogue in between the music that's explicit. Now, the show features John Hawkes, who plays Saul Starr, Earl Brown, who plays Dan Doherty, Paula Malcolmson, who plays Trixie, Sean Bridgers, who plays Johnny Burns, and Dayton Callie, who plays Charlie Utter. They're kind of the DJs for this show. And what I did is I took out all the music. For one thing, we don't want to have to deal with copyright issues. So basically, you'll hear them say, okay, and now here's a song by whoever, and then all of a sudden they'll be like, okay, now we're back. So you're just going to hear the talking of the various cast members, except, and I probably will be two or three podcasts from now where they actually played a song of from John Hawkes' band, which is King Straggler, and we've had it on an earlier podcast, but I'll go ahead and play it again on the on this upcoming podcast, just because they introduce it and they talk about it and everything, and then when it's over, they do a little analysis of it, and then we'll also they also play a song by Earl Brown's band, which is Sacred Cowboys, and we've also played that song on an earlier podcast, but I'll go ahead and play that again because again they kind of talk about it and everything. After that, we're going to have the speech that my wife, Mary Kopko, who's the director of the Adams Museum and House, gave while the cast members were here. They came and we had a reception for them at the Adams Museum, and the cast members came to tour the museum and see a presentation by Jerry Bryant, who, if you listen to the show regularly, you've heard him many times, the researcher from the Adams Museum, who works with David Milch and HBO. So she gave a speech that she wrote to as kind of a welcoming speech to the cast members to kind of kick off the reception. And so we're going to have that for you to listen to. After that, we're going to have an interview with Marilee Rush. Now, she I hesitate to call her a one-hit wonder, but I guess that actually is the reality because the only song that she's known for nationally is Angel of the Morning, which came out in the late 60s, which is a pretty awesome song. I think everyone's pretty familiar with that. But she was here for Cool Deadwood Nights, which is our kind of oldies celebration. And you've already heard interviews with Bobby V and Mitch Ryder, and Marilee Rush was here for that show too. So I think we're going to have three segments of my interview with her. This will be part number one. And then after that, we're going to have our normal Mount Moriah sound seeing tour with Alex, my son, who was the tour guide there at Mount Moriah Cemetery, the current home of Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane. Following that, we will have an interview and some music from Hank Harris. Now, he's a local Black Hills artist, and you've heard songs from him the last two podcasts, episodes 8 and 9. And he and my wife Mary got together, and they've put out a CD of music that was done, that was actually performed in the early days of Deadwood. That was the, kind of the popular music of the day. So we'll have a talk with him, and he'll tell us how he got involved with that, give us a little bit of his background. Then following that, we'll have a little bit of feedback from our emails to the Real Deadwood podcast. So let's get going with the cast from Deadwood as they appeared on Outlaw 36 on Sirius Satellite Radio.
No law at all in Deadwood. Is that true?
This is the Gunslingers, Gold Diggers, and Cocksuckers Radio Review on Sirius Satellite Radio's Outlaw 36. This is the cast of HBO's Deadwood. Take it away, you cocksuckers.
Hi, folks. This is Outlaw 36 on Sirius Satellite Radio. This is a special program featuring the cast of HBO's Deadwood. And I count myself amongst those numbers. I'm Earl Brown, and I play Dan Doherty.
I'm John Hawks. I play Saul Starr.
I'm Sean Bridgers. I play Johnny Burns.
I'm Dayton Kelly. I play Charlie Utter.
I'm Paula Malcolmson. I play Trixie the Whore.
Now, we were approached by my friend Steve Popovich over at Sirius and asked us to come in and play some songs for you folks and bring the cast in. We wanted to bring all 22 in, but this studio is only so big.
Hell, Earl, I've had prison cells bigger than this room.
You have?
Yes.
Bet you didn't have a cellmate near as pretty as the one sitting next to me, did you?
For Sean?
No, way, Sean.
He's shaved. Than Sean. He's shaved. His face is all smooth and tender now.
Not as pretty as Paula.
Well, anyway, we're going to get things started with some songs from Deadwood, from our TV show, and some songs about Deadwood. This is Big and Rich. That was June Carter Cash with Big Yellow Peaches. If you've seen our show, you know the significance of that special fruit.
That's right, Earl, because, you know, when my boss, Al Swearingen, has a big soiree or a big meeting at the gym saloon, you come in there and Johnny Burns will open up a big can of yellow peaches.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's really a special occasion, he might open up some pears. We couldn't find a pear song.
Well, we're working on it.
Yeah.
Maybe we could write one.
Never know.
Well, anyway.
I've got a nice pear.
Yes, you do. And then you almost killed Tom.
It's kind of cold in here.
Ooh, I'm getting hot. Anyhow, when we were approached about doing this, Sean had a great idea that we'd come up with song blocks that had subjects that dealt with our show.
Well, that's right, because our show deals with big themes, so we wanted some theme blocks, and that would be whoring.
Oh, yeah.
Whiskey drinking, digging for gold, and murder.
That sounds...
Anything we left out, Dayton?
Postal.
Or mail. mail carrier.
That leads to murder. I'm just kidding.
Well, we're going to get started
blackmail.
With these are whiskey songs. And this first one doesn't need an intro. If you don't know who the hell this is, you don't need to be listening to this radio station.
Now that's fucking progress.
Ooh, Outlaw 36 on Sirius Satellite Radio. You're hanging out with the cast of Deadwood today. I play Saul Starr.
I play Johnny Burns.
I'm Dan Doherty.
I'm Charlie Utter.
And I'm Trixie.
And Deadwood is on HBO.
And it ain't your granddaddy's Western.
Mm-mm. Mm.
No.
It's the sort of thing you might not want to invite the preacher over on Sunday nights to watch.
Well, unless you're an Episcopalian like me, because they do call us whiskey-palians, after all.
Well, if you want some whiskey, which we've been listening to the whiskey songs, what do you want to do in Deadwood if you need whiskey?
You need gold.
Yeah. How are you going to get it?
You got to dig.
Deep.
How deep?
Real deep.
Well...
This is sounding like the whore segment.
I know.
Here come the cowboy junkies.
Ain't the state of things cloudy enough? Don't we face enough fucking imponderables?
That was Loretta Lynn on Outlaw 36. She's from the great state of Kentucky. That's my home.
And before that, we had the great Doc Watson from Deep Gap, North Carolina.
It's your neck of the woods,
That's right. I'm from the mountains of North Carolina.
Paula, where are you from?
From Northern Ireland.
No.
Yeah. So all my people, I guess, the Ulster people settled along the Appalachian Trail.
Because all the taters got rotten.
That's right. So I guess you and I could be related?
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God.
We trade seats now, John. Dayton, where are you from?
I'm from the mountains in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Black Hills.
Hills of New Jersey. Oh, that hillbilly, Bruce Springsteen.
There you go.
Didn't you play with him once in the band?
Yeah, for about 5 minutes. I told him to go get his own band, and he pissed. You know.
John, where are you from?
I'm from rural Minnesota.
Home of Bob Dylan.
That's correct.
In the parlance of our show, you're a toe-headed hooplehead.
Well, I guess that makes you one haughty cocksucker.
Speaking of cocksuckers, our next segment of songs are about Old West prostitutes and women. And on our TV show, that's pretty much interchangeable.
Yeah, in Deadwood, there was 50 men for every one woman. So you can do the math. There was a lot of work for a whore back in the day.
I'm sure there was. Next, we've got the speech that my wife Mary gave at the Adams Museum for the Deadwood Actors Reception last summer.
I was recently asked to write about the Adams Museum's involvement in the show and what it has meant to us. And I call this piece The Magic of Deadwood. 3 years ago, a young man called with questions about what picks, pans, shovels, whiskey, and whores cost in 1876. He told me he was doing research for a show called Deadwood that David Milch was pitching to HBO. I do not remember the name of the man called, but I was aware of Milch's reputation for stellar writing and creating award-winning television shows. The possibility of his writing a show named for and about Deadwood spurred me to find answers to those questions rather quickly. In fact, I ran from my office over here to here, to our archives. A month later, museum staff reported that Milch's company was purchasing a sizable number of Deadwood history books. As season one was filmed, we were contacted periodically by members of the crew, primarily in props, for historically correct information. And over time, the relationship grew, and for season two, we were tapped regularly to provide historical information and photographs. It has become great fun for my staff and me to see our research show up in episodes. In early March 2005, my husband Paul, research curator Jerry Bryant, his wife Linda, and I were invited to the Deadwood set. A walk down HBO Deadwood's version of Main Street is an eerie experience. Everything from the set design and props to the costuming and makeup is rooted in historical reality. And it truly feels and looks like 1876-77 Deadwood. David Milch's vision of Deadwood is far from textbook history. He didn't intend the series to be a documentary. Rather, it may be considered a fine piece of dramatic literature that can be approached and appreciated on many levels. While some of the story is based on historical facts, most of the characters are archetypes. And the drama that ensues is rooted in the fertile imagination of Milch and his writers. One of the joys of watching the 12 episodes offered each season is to pan for the literary and historical nuggets. References to Macbeth, Hamlet, Turn of the Screw, Old Man and the Sea, The Scarlet Letter, or Billy Budd come to mind. And yes, I confess I have to watch the show numerous times, read the online synopsis each week, read the HBO community boards, and turn on subtitles. I particularly love how Milch and his writers weave elements of historical events into a fictitious storyline, such as combining elements of the Metz massacre with that of the Wagner family massacre in season one, or the case of mistaken identity in the Bummer Dam and Laughing Sam killing in season two. Aside from the fact that our visitation is up 37%, bookstore sales are up 108%, and our website went from 8,500 web hits a month to 6.6 million hits per month.
It's taken a long time to do this.
The museum has created many unexpected opportunities. Because of the barrage of questions that we get from the show's writers and crew, in addition to all the questions asked by the media and fans of the show, we've had to hire additional staff to do primary research generate new insight into what was known previously, provide more details for exhibits, and write new publications about Deadwood's history. Ironically, a work of Hollywood fiction has been the impetus for the Adams Museum to dig deeper into the facts of the region's history. All of the notoriety the museum has garnered has resulted in a number of major gifts of artifacts made to the museum. Of greatest importance, just a few weeks ago, the Homestake Mining Company donated one of the most significant collections of materials of our community's history to us. This collection contains over 15,000 square feet of material and represents the entire history of the primary business that supported the Deadwood League community for 126 years. It includes thousands of historic photographs and glass negatives, architectural drawings, maps of the mining area, blueprints, patents, legal documents, geological records, original correspondence, and so much more. And the primary reason we were approached by the Homestake Company is because of the notoriety we received as a result of our relationship with you. With the tremendous backing of the City of Deadwood, the Deadwood Historic Preservation Commission, and with gaming tax proceeds, we have an opportunity like no other to set up a major research facility and further diversify our economy. When I visited with David Milch about the importance of this project, he was the first individual to make a significant financial contribution to this project. You all should be very proud of that. Chicken-haired bloomers, walking in the muck, carrying body pig carcasses, wearing lavender gloves. I also want to thank you for forcing me to become knowledgeable about the history of profanity and to be the first historian ever to be leaked on the History Channel. Actors who are responsible for creating a lot of the magic in both the imagined and the real Deadwood. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for here. Enjoy your time here.
And one more thing. For the next 15 minutes, snatch his hat across.
I don't think so, Earl. Not in the Adams Museum. Now it's time for my musical guest, and as usual, I'll play a little medley here of music, and the first one I don't think you're going to be able to recognize, but this is the type of music that she's capable of doing, more of a harder rock or she also does some rhythm and blues kind of music, and then after that we'll hear her big hit, and then we'll hear the interview, so hang on, and here we go. And, of course, that is Merrilee Rush. And here we go with part one of my interview with her after her performance at Cool Deadwood Nights. Okay, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast, and I'm here with Merrilee Rush, the legendary Merrilee Rush.
Oh, you know, go on.
I know. Well, you know, I talked to Bobby before, and he's just such a nice guy and was not shy about being, you know, a legend in his own time and everything, and
yeah.
You know, you're just—I mean, what can you say? Now, I did read
a rumor in my own time, a legend in my own room.
I do a little R&B here in town and play some music and some of the soul and blues
cool.
kind of stuff.
And I did read that you participate in, what is it, Women for R&B Seattle?
Oh, I was in a group called Seattle Women of Rhythm and Blues.
Oh, okay.
And the gal who put that together is now in Detroit with the same thing going on. And I was the one who did the R&B, and most of the other gals did blues, and I just told the audience I don't do blues because I don't get depressed.
Right. Well,
I live on the east side.
Yeah.
And of Seattle, and we don't sing the blues on the east side.
Yeah, you're too happy over there, huh?
We're too happy.
Now, have you seen the Deadwood TV show on HBO yet?
No, I haven't.
No.
Oh, yes, I did.
You did.
Oh, my. Cruel. Very cruel.
You weren't scandalized by the language or anything?
Oh, not the language. No, I love the language. The brutality, the coarse brutality of it was...
Now, see, the brutality affected you more than the language. Around
absolutely.
Here, it's everything, oh, well, they didn't talk that way, but yet, killing, no problem. You know, I mean, the violence...
Yeah, I have a problem with the killing, just the tension, that tension of something horrible is going to happen.
Well, that's, you know, NYPD
and something
Blue, that's David
did
Milch,
happen,
you know?
Horrible happened.
Yeah, well, and, you know, every other one, he's got kind of strung out where something... kind of gripping happens.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's. I thought it was really excellent.
Yeah.
Just an excellent effort. But
well, it's up for, I think, 11 Emmys, and the Emmys will be, I guess, in March. And the second season is over, and they're shooting the third season now. And the first season's available on DVDs, 10 DVDs or whatever it is. And so the second season should be available on DVDs pretty soon. My wife runs the museum over here. She's the director, and she's been a consultant for over 2 years now to HBO, where they wanted to know how much was a drink of whiskey, how much was a pick and shovel, and what would they have eaten this, you know, and some of the characters in the show are based on real people, and some of them are fictitious that David Milch has made up. And so, in fact, there's a character that's going to be now in the third season where they're going to intimate that he was gay, but they're not going to come right out and say it. And just the other day, they were asking her now, are you sure there's no... I need to get back to the writers. Are you sure there was no record of his actually, you know, being seen doing anything gay? And she's like, no.
He would have been dead in a minute.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want, you know. You can speculate and everything. So that's kind of an interesting thing.
He would have been dead in a minute.
So is this your first visit to Deadwood?
Yeah, it is, because... In the 60s, when we were touring, going back and forth across country, we would go I-90, you know, mm-hmm. through Rapid City, but never took the time to come
right.
here, and I'm sorry
off
we
the beaten
didn't.
Path, yeah.
Yeah, because it's just wonderful.
Well, back in those days, though, probably Deadwood wasn't much to speak of. I mean, there were brothels here. You know, Bobby was saying that 30 years ago, he would come through Deadwood because he was living in the Midwest and commuting to California. But see, back then we had brothels. They didn't close the brothels down here in Deadwood till like in the 80s.
Oh my.
Yeah, and so this was one of the last bastions of whoredom, I suppose you could call it.
Woohoo.
Yeah, so I mean, well, how old were you when you started out with music? When did you know that that's what you wanted to do?
Well, when I was 9, my folks started giving me piano lessons. Mm-hmm. I took classical piano for 10 years. And but when rock and roll came along in the mid-50s, I just, that was it. I just couldn't, mm-hmm. I couldn't see myself going through the torture of classical music, what it entails. It's just a lot of work and dedication.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was moved by the music. I was mm-hmm. moved by, you know, the doo-wop, Elvis, Bill Haley was the first, uh-huh. and Fats Domino, and that kind of music, and the doo-wop.
Yep.
And then it evolved from there.
And that's Mary Lee Rush, and she just is a wonderful lady. She was a pleasure to talk to, and she's just full of fun. And we will hear part two of my interview with her in the next Real Deadwood podcast.
This is the Real Deadwood podcast with Paul Dennis.
Now it's time for Alex Kopko, my son, the tour guide from Mount Moriah Cemetery, and the next installment of his soundseeing tour of Mount Moriah. We finally got to Calamity Jane last time, and guess what? This time we're going to get to Wild Bill Hickok's grave. So here we go with Alex.
Obviously, because of that statue there, you can tell that it is Wild Bill, James Butler Hickok. He said about 6'3", weighed approximately 200 pounds, was a huge guy back then, and is even still a big guy in today's terms. He served in the Civil War under George Armstrong Custer as a scout and a spy, but eventually his eyesight started failing, and what good's a spy who can't see? So he was able to pull out of the Army a little bit before the war ended. He went into Cincinnati, where he met his wife, Agnes. She was 50, he was 39 when they got married. Don't ask me how that happened. But they got married there in Cincinnati, and then a couple months later, he left her and said that he was going to come into Deadwood here to make his fortune, to strike it rich, gold mining and that type of thing. So he came into Deadwood with his good friend Charlie Utter, came in here to town, and I guess actually never really did any mining. He was a very clean guy, always bathed, always had clean clothes, and the idea of standing knee-deep in freezing muddy water playing in the dirt was not his idea really of a good time. So he instead decided to try to strike his fortune by doing or following his only true love, quote-unquote, of gambling. And so just under 3 weeks later, he was shot here in Deadwood by Jack McCall in the back of the head while playing a game of poker, of all things, and he never did strike it rich. Jack McCall was caught here in Deadwood and was tried here in Deadwood by a pretty roughly thrown together miners' court, and was found innocent, and then was later caught in Wyoming, hauled back here into Yankton, which is East River and was the capital of the Dakota Territories at the time, was tried again, this time by a judicial court, and was found guilty and hanged and buried in Yankton with a noose around his neck, supposedly face down. And the reason they were able to try him a second time for the same crime was that the first trial here in Deadwood was negated because we were still, once again, trespassing on Native American land. So they said that the trial never actually went through. So luckily for Wild Bill, Jack McCall got what was coming to him. Now, Wild Bill, like I said, was buried in the Ingleside Cemetery for 2 years and then moved to his current location here. The stone they see here on his grave is the third. The first looked identical to this, but was carved of sandstone. And at the turn of the century, it was reduced from a 9-foot-tall monument to a 4.5-inch-tall piece of rubble due to souvenir hunters and the like. The second stone that was up here was once again made of sandstone. And this was a life-size model of him. It is, well, what's left is on display at the Adams Museum, minus its head and its arms, and one of his legs, I guess, was found all the way across the cemetery, but he is reassembled at the Adams Museum once again. Check out the Adams Museum website, adamsmuseumandhouse.org, for information. So they do have that on display there at the museum. So this is the third monument that they put up in 2002, and this monument is actually made of clay and encased in a bronze shell so that it's hopefully a little bit more chip-proof for those little tourists and their pickaxes and whatnot. So instead of taking chunks of him, now people leave money around the base of his grave there. And also when I worked here during the summer, I was a tour guide here during the summer, people left some pretty interesting things. There was a whole bottle of peppermint schnapps on his grave. Someone left some coupons for Colgate toothpaste. I guess they figure he was a dirty guy, but like I said, it was quite the contrary. There were cigarettes and cigars. There were plastic badges, plastic guns. People left their business cards on there. Hey, get in touch with me even though you're dead. And also, I guess, Wild Bill, due to the Wild Bill days that Deadwood has and everything, pulls in alone about $100,000 worth of revenue, and all he does is lie there in the ground. So I hope I can do that someday when I die. Also, when people were buried here in Mount Moriah, you know, you dig 3 feet under the ground, you're hitting bedrock. No one wants to chisel away through the ground. So, you know, hey, Johnny, let's just throw the guy in there. Let's go home. The wife has some stew sitting on the table for me. He said, all right. So Wild Bill really was only about 3 feet underneath the ground. And so when they built this wall, they filled in dirt and things to kind of elevate his grave, put a little extra dirt on him there. Also, when they were putting in the sidewalk that we have here, they had up here what's called a ground penetrating radar to make sure they didn't build a sidewalk on someone's grave because Deadwood didn't want to get sued. So they thought it'd be cool to see if the big guy was still in his grave, and sure enough, he is in there. And so when they set this monument here on his grave, they decided it would be cool to have his face facing the same way as his body. So if he were doing crunches right now, yeah, it's a scary thought, but bear with me. Every time he bobbed up, his face would look just like that. Also, they did a scan of Calamity Jane's grave, and sure enough, she is buried next to him, but she's kind of buried at an angle towards Wild Bill, so we like to joke that she's maybe trying to scoot over a little bit closer, get a little closer to the man that she loved, quote, quote.
And another good job there by Alex. Now we're going to have some music from the Deadwood Songbook CD by Hank Harris, and then right after that, we'll have part one of my interview with him.
As I was walking one morning for pleasure, spied a cowpuncher, he was riding along. His hat was thrown back, and his spurs was jingling. And as he approached, he was singing this song. Whoop-a-di-yo, get along, little doggies, it's your misfortune and none of my own. Whoop-a-di-yo, get along, little doggies, you know that wild man gonna be your new home. It's early in the spring that we round up the doggies, slap on the brands and we bob off the tail. We round up the horses, load up the chuck wagon, then throw them doggies out on the trail. Hi-oh, get along, you damn little doggies, know that Wyoming shall be your new home. We're swearing and a-cursing and a-damning the doggies to our misfortune, not of their own. Your mama was raised way down in Texas, where the gyms and weed and sandburrs they grow. Now we'll fill you up on prickly pear and joya till you're ready for the trail to old Idaho. Hi-ho, get along, you damn little doggies, know that Wyoming shall be your new home. Well, it's swearing and a cursing and a damning the doggies to our misfortune, none of their own. Whoop-a-tie-yo, get along, little doggies, you know that Wyoming will be your new home. Whoop-a-tie-yo, get along, little doggies, you know that Wyoming will be your new home. You know that Wyoming will be your new home.
Okay, on the Real Deadwood podcast, my guest right now is Hank Harris, and he is a local Black Hills musician and songwriter and researcher and all this other stuff. How long have you been performing in the Black Hills? Are you a homie, or are you from around here, or did you move here?
No, I'm originally from Florida.
Really?
But my dad
Have we talked about that before? Because I'm from Florida, too.
My dad was in the Air Force. I was born in Tampa. Ed McDill,
really?
At Tampa.
We used to go there and get all our supplies because my dad had a BX pass from being disabled in the service, and I'm from Sarasota.
Okay.
We'd drive up to Tampa and load up the car and go back home, and yeah.
Well, my dad was originally and my mom were from Winter Park, Maitland area over by Orlando, mm-hmm. and he was stationed at McDill when I got born, and we were gone within 2 months to Virginia, then Hawaii, then Detroit, then back to Virginia, then Maryland, then
now, we're in
Guatemala
Virginia?
City.
Where in Virginia was that?
We've
talked about this before.
My dad was at Fort Belvoir for a while, and then he got in the Foreign Service to...
Where's Fort Belvoir? Is that
Fort Belvoir
in, near
is
D.C.?
It's about 20 miles below Mount Vernon.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because so I lived in Charlottesville and Stanton and Waynesboro.
And then when my dad, he became a diplomat guy. He was the assistant air attaché to Central America. So for 2 years, cool. We lived in Alexandria, Virginia, mm-hmm. while he went to intelligence school and attaché school and language school in D.C.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you've been around here then for how long?
Since about 85 in the Black Hills.
So that's over 20 years, huh?
Yeah, and then I was on the eastern side of the state for about 8 or 10 years before that. So South Dakota is easily the longest mm-hmm. I've ever lived anywhere.
And did you take music lessons when you were younger, or did you just pick it up by ear? Or?
When we lived in Guatemala, when I was about 11, my dad got a couple of probably $10 classical guitars from Costa Rica mm-hmm. and brought them home to me and my brother. And my brother wasn't interested, and I was. And I took about 6 months of guitar classes with a gentleman, came over very neat in a nice little suit every day, every time. And he didn't speak much English, and I didn't speak much Spanish, but he was very, very nice guy. He taught me some Spanish songs and some like Managua, Nicaragua was one of the songs he taught me.
Managua, Nicaragua.
That's right.
Ay, caramba.
And then also he was cool in that he would take some records home. He'd take a Ventures or a Peter, Paul, and Mary record home, mine, and he'd learn the song, and he'd come back and he'd show me how to play it.
Oh, I see, yeah.
So
yeah,
that was my musical training.
Yeah, when I gave music lessons in New York, in Great Neck, New York, the same thing. These kids could play when you put music in front of them, but what good is that? You can't be in a band and go buy Led Zeppelin sheet music and learn all that stuff. So I'd say, okay, bring in your favorite record.
Right.
And for the last 10 minutes of the lesson, we'll mm-hmm. – well, it turns out a lot of them couldn't really do it. I wound up basically just – picking it up off the record and showing right. them how to do it, because they just was a little bit beyond them at that point. But that's definitely the way to do it. Yep. And have somebody show you how that works and learn how to play by ear. Now you perform by yourself as a solo artist, and then you've been with some bands too, right, around mm-hmm. this area?
Dee Dee and the Pharaohs I played bass with for quite a few years now. Played with a band called The Shades. Had a duo, Hank and Christy, and on the other side of the state years ago, I played in a band called the Red Willow Band, and we're reuniting again this year in September to play for the Vietnam Vets Memorial thing in Pier. We're going to play, and then the Beach Boys are going
to
play.
Wow, to open for the Beach Boys.
And then the next night we'll go Saturday night to the Great Hall at the Washington Pavilion in Sioux Falls.
Slick-a-mundo. Yeah.
Should be fun.
Yep. And make sure you listen to the next Real Deadwood podcast, and you'll hear part two of my interview with Hank. And now I've got some mail to read you, and this is from Steven Schleicher, who I mentioned a couple of podcasts back. He's from the Coolness Roundup podcast, and he had played on the Real Deadwood podcast promo, our little kind of a commercial deal on his podcast, and as a result of that, I put a link to his podcast on our links page at realdeadwoodpodcast.com. So he sent me an email here. It says, "Hi, Paul. Steven Schleicher from the Coolness Roundup podcast. Thanks for the link. I have a question and a request. One of my students is doing a documentary on Wild Bill and his time in Hayes, Kansas. Near the end of her project, she summarizes the death of Bill in Deadwood. We are looking for any photos, parentheses, digital are fine, and permission to use those images in her video project. We are especially looking for any copyright-free images of Bill Hickok. The project will air locally, and she or the school will not make any money on the project. She found some photos online of the reenactment done in Deadwood each year and would like to use those. Do you or your wife have any of these photos we may use? Any help or assistance you can provide would be great. Looking forward to hearing from you soon." So this is great that podcasters helping podcasters, you know, and my wife was happy to put him in contact with her, the person in charge of their photos, and we got him squared away. So thanks for your letter there, Stephen, and we're glad we could help you out. Now, I want to make sure to mention in each podcast that if this is the first time you're listening to the Real Deadwood podcast, make sure you go back and listen to all the ones before this, because they do not expire. They don't get old. The fun that we have with the actors and the interviews that you hear of the musicians and the sound-seeing tours of Mount Moriah will never get old, so make sure you listen to those and keep listening to the Real Deadwood podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the Real Deadwood podcast if you haven't already. That way you will automatically get each new episode as it comes out, the same as somebody throwing a newspaper on your front step. I would like to mention again that I would really appreciate it if all of you that are listening, number one, would tell 10 of your friends about the Real Deadwood podcast. And number two, if you would please, on the realdeadwoodpodcast.com website, in the upper right-hand corner is a link to vote for the Real Deadwood podcast at Podcast Alley. That will really help to spread the word and really help to popularize the Real Deadwood podcast so that more and more people the world over can share the fun and share all the entertainment that we have here every time on the Real Deadwood podcast. We're up to about 50 countries now, if you can believe that, all over the world that have accessed the Real Deadwood podcast website, which is just phenomenal. Now, another new feature we have on the website, besides the poll where you can vote for your favorite HBO Deadwood character, is a listener survey where you can tell us what you think about the Real Deadwood podcast in a quick 5-minute survey. So that link is right below the Podcast Alley voting link. So please click on that and fill out our survey and let us know what you think. Now, on the next Real Deadwood podcast, I will be starting a contest. And the prize for this contest will be a fantastic Deadwood mug that has been supplied by John Rizzo, the Emmy Award-winning head of makeup for the HBO Deadwood show. So make sure you listen to the next Real Deadwood podcast to find out how you can win this fantastic HBO Deadwood mug. Well, that's it for this episode of the Real Deadwood podcast. Thanks again so much for being with me. The tune you're hearing right now is called Black Hills Fairy Gold. It's off my album called Black Hills Gold. And you can buy this one tune or as many tunes as you want from iTunes. If you go to therealdeadwoodpodcast.com, you will see a link there for that. You'll also see a link to subscribe to the Real Deadwood podcast in iTunes. If you'd like to leave a comment or make a suggestion for the Real Deadwood podcast, there's a couple ways to do that. One is with Skype, which is a free program at Skype.com. Once you install that, you can search for Real Deadwood Podcast in the contacts, and you can leave an audio feedback. You can go ahead and speak your mind, and we might just play that for you here on the show. The other way you can contact us is to send me an email at realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com. You can either do that with your own email program, or we've got a contact page where you can just go ahead and fill out your comment, hit submit, and I will get it. From the Real Deadwood, this is Paul Dennis wishing you all the best.